Hello and welcome to Clear the Air with me, Jess.
And me, Kaylee. Let's Clear the Air with Jess and Kaylee will be available on all platforms where you listen to your podcast. The podcast is there to discuss all things personal, mindset, political, female, and a mass of food sharing. So make sure to tune in to us every Tuesday. Thanks, guys.
So Jess and I actually recorded this podcast yesterday with our special guest, and we were supposed to do the introduction for this special guest, but I have to admit I completely forgot. So now whilst editing this podcast episode, I thought, well, this guest most definitely needs a good introduction. So we are so, so excited to say that our second guest of the podcast is Jermaine Pennant. Now, Jermaine has come on because he has a new podcast out on the 3rd of May called Brutally Honest. I thought I would read you actually what Jermaine has put for like as his kind of bio for the trailer for his podcast that's coming out on the 3rd of May, because I think it just perfectly sums up why Jermaine's doing the podcast, what it means to him, and gives you guys an insight into why me and Jess really wanted to have this conversation, and how insightful Jermaine is and what he's trying to do with this platform. So Jermaine says, many people have seen my mistakes publicly and personally, and I wanted to delve into the depths of my own childhood alongside guests who have suffered from trauma, guests who are professionals in mental health, guests who have played alongside me, and long-term friends who can help us all look into ourselves and be the best version we can be. By peeling back the layers of the proverbial onion, we can start to heal traumas that have followed us for years and break the patterns. I've made so many mistakes throughout my life, and getting the chance with help from my guests to understand how my childhood and my own mindset affected me has been an incredible journey so far. I hope with my story, which I will tell throughout the podcast, and the stories of my incredible guests, that this can help my listeners too. And I think this just perfectly sums up why, you know, me and Jess wanted to have Jermaine on the podcast, especially. Not that sex is important, but as a male, we think it's so important to have males speak about mental health and speak openly about it, as I'm sure we're all aware that, you know, suicide is the biggest killer of males. And yeah, I mean, obviously as well, from a personal point of view, Jess is a really good friend of mine, and it has just publicly kind of been announced that Jermaine and Jess are together, which is wonderful. So it was lovely getting the chance to just sit down with my friend and her boyfriend and have just a chat and a natter. So yeah, I hope you guys really, really enjoy this episode. We all did. It was a fun Sunday morning, and yeah, I hope you enjoy. Hello.
Hi.
You always take about 3 seconds to oh, hello. Straight in.
Straight in with the guest.
How are we all doing?
Really well, thank you. I'm excited that we've got our second guest. It's an exciting one for me, a biased one for me, I suppose.
Yeah, we are very, very excited. Yeah, to have Jermaine with us today.
I think he is as well. Welcome, Mr. Jermaine Pennant.
Hi, everybody. How's it going?
Imagine if they replied, that'd be creepy, wouldn't it? Yeah.
We're well.
It feels strange because we will do your like bio and introduce you afterwards, but now it feels awkward that we've gone straight in. So we're just like, hello. But no, it's lovely to have you with us today. It's a nice Sunday morning. It's very bright outside. We're all good.
We haven't even opened the curtains yet, to be fair. So in context, everyone, we're recording this together. We've just got out of bed. So this is why it's a biased one, because Jermaine, if you don't know, is my other half.
Ooh. And you know what's really funny is the whole time we've done the podcast, I remember the first time you said Jermaine's name and I was like, do you want me to take that out? do you not? So it's lovely to have you here. It's lovely to be speaking to you both together.
I've heard a few of your podcasts, so I thought, you know what, let me get involved. Why not? Why not?
A nice girly chat, which he loves to do.
Love it. So how has both your weeks been? Good?
Yes, been well. Last night was we had a lovely little meal, an early one, 6 o'clock. That's almost pushing late boundaries for us.
So this is ridiculous. We are so old, like in our minds, like we're in bed by 9 o'clock nearly every night. So when we go for date night, it's a 6 p.m. dinner, so we can be home by 8, so we don't mess up our routine. Like, I mean, I'm like this anyway. like yeah. most of the times. And every now and then I'll go off the rails and go out with my friends and have a few bevs. Yeah. But it's very rare that it happens. So when I met someone that was like not freaked out by the fact that, you know, 8 o'clock's bath time, 8:30 is bedtime, kind of works well. So I'm quite lucky there.
It was funny because we was driving in and people was coming out of the shopping centre still with shopping bags. And we're still fully ready to go dinner.
You're like, it's dinner time. Did you ever remember that? Did you ever have nights out in Spoons? And I remember it used to be so awkward because we'd all be like dressed up on a Saturday night. It'd be like 8 o'clock and there'd still be like families having dinners, but we're like, it's ready. Yeah. Let's get the pictures. We're going. Fab. So it's really exciting to have you here, Jermaine. I know you're bringing out your podcast on the 3rd of May.
Yes, that's correct. It's called Brutally Honest. Yeah. And we're looking forward to it. Just a little, a big dive into my background, my upbringing, my troubled trauma from being a child. And mental awareness for other people who've had difficulty upbringings and broken homes, how to deal with it for youngsters in the sport, youngsters in general. And even people in the adult life who are going through a difficult period in their life but can't address it or afraid or ashamed to admit it that they've got an issues. And, you know, it's just help them to understand and go, oh, okay, I see where it's coming from. I feel like that sometimes. I'm going to try and seek advice. So, yes.
Yeah, and I think this is why I think podcasts are so useful, because sometimes it's hard for us to go seek help, whether that's from kind of a therapist or in kind of groups and things. But when we see those that we've looked up to, whether that's in sport, whether that's on our TV screens, it's a lot easier sometimes to digest or see ourselves or kind of look at what we've been through and relate that to somebody. So I think that'll be massively useful. And I'm sure many people have found that through you, Jess, when you've done interviews and you've spoken out, that you've kind of sought that and seen that people have been like, it's amazing to see you kind of talk openly about it. And I can relate to it.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the time people just think when they see someone on the telly or they see a sportsman or they see someone that's in the public eye, they just think, oh, look how well they've done, or they're acting this way because they're just a dick and they've got money or they've got this, or, you know, it's very easy to just put that assumption. But you don't realize, even if you're in the public eye, you've still got a history, you've still got a past, and you're still human. And, you know, as like Jermaine has obviously, you know, in the past, gone off the rails a bit, done things in your career that you just regret. And, you know, you don't know the backstory of that. You don't know what makes someone do what they do. Like, you know, with Jermaine's case, when we was looking at the podcast, you know, you dive deep into someone's life and you see, okay, there was a lack of guidance. There was this, you know, these awful things that had happened. And until you become aware of the reason why you're acting out in certain ways is because of these things, you can never address them. So I think your podcast, Jermaine, Brutally Honest, it's also helping the awareness, because as soon as you become aware of your own thoughts and the own things that trigger you, you can start to fix it. And I think you talking out about it and actually seeing where you went wrong and knowing what caused that, I think it will help so many other people.
Yeah, I think admitting that there's an issue that you need to go and speak to someone is probably the biggest battle.
Yeah.
And the word therapy, sometimes for men, I think women deal with it better, but for men, it's like, I don't want to go to therapy because people think I'm mental. That I'm weak if I'm going to therapy. I'm not well. So. Yeah. It's nothing to do with that. You've got to put your ego aside. It's about your health. It's going to see your therapist. You know, there's people, actors and sports people, who have therapists every week, you know, to keep them in the best frame of mind. It's just, so hopefully that can shine some light that it's okay to not be amazing every day. It's okay to have issues or mental issues, but it's, you know, going speaking about it is the best way, and it helps massively.
Absolutely. And for you to think about doing the podcast and to feel that you can have those conversations, what happened in, like, for you, was it the relationship now with Jess? You speak so openly about things and mental health and things like that, or is it before that you felt a big turnaround in which you wanted to then help other people, rather than, I suppose, a lot of us are kind of trying to repair ourselves, and now you've got to the stage where you feel like you're there and you want to help others and showcase that you can speak about mental health and that it's okay not to be okay. So where was that kind of change for you?
Well, obviously being around Jess, she's an amazing person. She always wants you to do better.
Not biased.
Yeah, no. This is not biased at all. Anyway. I'm not being absolutely biased. but no, she does bring out the best in people and definitely me. And it was a multiple things that have been going on, like with some young sports stars getting themselves in such pickles and almost throwing their whole career away before it's even really kicked off massively. Mm. And I'm sitting down and thinking, that's such a waste. You know, what he could have had or what he could have achieved. And he's made a stupid, you know, career ending mistake. And then I thought about it thinking, why is he doing that?
Yeah.
Is his background broken? Did he have the same issues that I was having? Is he going to make the same mistakes that I was making and then ultimately have zero and be in a bad place? So I thought, well, if I can give something back, I'm retired now. So if I can give something back, help the youngsters and push it on to even anyone in general who's in these, have to find the same difficulties, then I thought, yeah, I'm happy to speak about my issues, my problems, my mistakes. And I'm learning and trying to do better and trying to amend them for the future. So speaking on a podcast, which is a great platform, hopefully, you know, I know a lot of footballers, I know a lot of people, so hopefully they can, you know, share it and it can just basically just get out there and, you know, show my story and think, okay, well, he was a successful footballer and he came from a really bad place. He went for a bad time and there is light at the end of the tunnel if you amend it, address it and kind of admit you've got a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we did an episode, didn't we, Jess? Like, I think it was our third episode that was like about men. And we said that there is so much pressure now, we think, on kind of males, whether to be sensitive or to kind of that everything that we used to describe of men or like, oh, my brain's going dead now. But like, you know, there'd be so much expectation on them to be like manly or firm or strong and things like that. And now it's kind of trying to open up a space in which they can be sensitive or talk about their mental health and things like that. I think it's a bigger jump in the sphere we're in now for men and for men to help men, if that makes sense, and say to them it's okay. Whereas for us, I do think, like you mentioned, Jermaine, we kind of, like for me and Jess with this podcast, I think it was easier for us to just start talking about it, wasn't it? Whereas probably for you, I think doing this podcast will be something very different. I think we haven't seen many, especially UK based. I think there is a difference between US and UK a bit. They're kind of more onto everyone needs to go to counseling or have therapy. Whereas in the UK, it's still quite a closed subject, I think, especially in men. So I think what you're doing and paving the way for that conversation is amazing.
I think also it's like breaking down that internalized misogyny that we've all had. Absolutely. You know, men are, you know, if you cry as a kid, that your parents are like, man up, you've got to do this, and so this man up. Well, actually, I think now the strongest of men are ones that can open up because they're the most settled in themselves.
Yeah.
It's when you can't speak because you're trying to hold on to this strength that actually there's a worrying thing inside that's going to be like a pressure cooker. And there's a massive suicide rate in men of midlife age.
Yeah.
And it's because I think it's always been told, you know, push it down, you're a man up, no crying, don't speak about it, you just push through and be tough. When actually I think that whole, you know, that whole idea has absolutely destroyed a lot of men and families because of this internalized misogyny that we've all got.
Yeah, you're both right, because even now I think I would be a little bit tentative to approach one of my friends and go, listen, I'm going through this. I think I'm struggling on this. I would find it a lot more easier speaking on the podcast and getting it, you know, speak to a therapist on the podcast and kind of let the old world listen to it. But because it's my friends, I feel like I've got to, you know, it is right. Mm-hmm. It's ego. It's, you don't want to feel weak. And I'm learning and getting better and better with my emotions now, which that was one of my issues that I had to deal with from the trauma that I've got. And I kind of shut my emotions off, so I didn't feel that pain that kind of came back from my childhood trauma.
And I think just to give a bit of context for that. So Jermaine, I don't know if you're happy talking about it, but obviously Jermaine's childhood trauma, one of the things was you were left by your mother, right? So
At the age of three.
Yeah. So the normal maternal instinct you get, you know, you have from your mother, that just doesn't exist. So there's like voids left from that, and especially in a male, I think you know there's a void left from why she didn't wasn't there, didn't want to be there. There's voids, you know, you need that attention. But also I found with you was that you could cut off emotionally very easy. And as we've progressed in our relationship, I think where you've been talking out, where you've been doing the podcast, where you've been speaking to people, I'm noticing a change in that with you. And it's really nice to see, because it's something that you shut down for so long, I think.
Yeah, it is. And there's definitely scar tissue there for sure. But the more you speak, the more it gets peeled away, the more you feel you get the baggage off your shoulders, and you feel the weight lifted, and then you start becoming more open, and then you start letting things in a lot easier. Like I said, not having that move around is for a child, I think it's a bigger loss than obviously not having your father around. Because the bond that you have with your mother is unique. The maternity love is massive, and it kind of shapes you for your adult life, adult relationships, which I struggled on.
Yeah.
Because of that, and I struggled with films because I never had that bond. And a lot of women in my younger years, I moved on from woman to woman, stepmom to stepmom, and it always felt like I was second best and abandonment and not really wanted. So that effect had a massive impact on my life. But speaking about it now.
Sorry. And was it that feeling that way that then led you, did you end up making similar mistakes to your relationships because of that? So did you kind of, I mean, not that you were trying to, but disrespect them or kind of move on or kind of give, I suppose, those issues onto somebody else that you'd suffered? So was that kind of that sort of pattern, or was it not that? Were you just seeking kind of some sort of maternal love or love that you hadn't received in different relationships?
Yeah, I would get to a point in the relationship, if things wasn't going right, I would then choose to seek validation elsewhere before the worst happened, before I felt abandonment. So I'd want it to be my doing, not someone else again abandoning me, and then me having that pain from the childhood trauma, which happens, you know, you subconsciously, you don't actually know, you know, why you feel, you don't know why. You just, it's like a automatic defense mechanism where you feel the need to, you know, speak to someone else or just get attention from someone else to feel another woman wanting you when your relationship ain't going right. Or sometimes even when it's going great, you then get scared thinking, hold on, I'm in a different territory. This is all new to me. I better fuck it up before, you know, before she does. It's crazy the impact it has.
There must be a trigger there somewhere, that something happens within a relationship that triggers you to feel that way. Have you found out what that is? You know what I mean? There must be a stage in the relationship which led to that maybe happening, that maybe reminded you of not having that in childhood, or that scared feeling. Maybe like you, I listened to your podcast and where you said about having kind of four different stepmoms. Maybe it's that you're feeling like, you know, they're going to go, or it's kind of going free people. There must be something at some stage that changes that.
I think it's not just one single thing. I think it's a pattern of things that happen, and then it triggers, which I'm speaking to people, and I have spoke to people about it, and I am getting a lot of better understanding why. And it's when you feel vulnerable in the relationship, when you feel like when the trust is not there, that you know kind of kickstarts it. Or if the other person you feel like is belittling you sometimes, doesn't speak to you nicely. There's loads of little things that happen that, you know, I can feel a defense mechanism coming on, where else I don't say it's because I'm going to, you know, break down and I know what's going to, that's actually the answer. Shut down.
Yeah.
That's what I do. And then that's when, you know, the wheels start to fall off.
Yeah. But I think it's nice to notice the pattern, because what we know is that you don't know what you don't know. So
exactly.
You can be doing these things. And I'll look back in some of my things now, you know, my old patterns from the past, and I'll notice what I'm doing now. As before, I didn't know that's what I was doing. So I'd kick off, I'd have a reaction because that's what I was watching. You know, my mum was quite fiery when she'd had a drink. My brother, other people in my family would always kick off. And I was copying that as I got older. So Jermaine, you've kind of gone, you know, you've watched your dad go from stepmom to stepmom. Your own mum's left, So there's two patterns that it's not just one easy cycle for you, because there was so much going on, and it's just realizing what's happening, finding the pattern, because you can only break a pattern if you notice the pattern, because if you don't know it's there, you're not going to be able to break it. So it's just that self-awareness. And I find that I'm writing my second book at the minute, and the opening chapter is self-awareness, because that was the key thing for me to change my life around, was being aware of what I was doing. So it's like the way to find that, I found, was I've got an outcome I didn't want, so something's gone wrong here. Work my way back to what I've done, and I've kicked off there and I shouldn't have, or I've done something here which I didn't, I passed, that didn't work, so therefore that's the pattern. So next time I go to do it, I'll notice it and I'll stop it.
Yeah.
So it's just about finding them patterns, and what's good now, Jermaine, is that you're clearly coming aware of them and finding them as it's happening, and you know that that's gonna help not just you and your whole future, but it's also now doing the podcasts, you're raising awareness of how to spot them, and once you spot them, you can change them, and that's the ultimate goal.
Yeah, it's not also just in a relationship, it's in life itself as well, as in if work's not going well, if you're not happy within yourself, if you're down, then that can also, you know, trigger. So there's a lot of things play into it, but like you said, it's about realizing and knowing how to address those issues before they take hold of you.
And I have very similar patterns to you, Jermaine, where I struggle with eating disorders throughout the whole of my childhood and teen years. And it's really funny because I have no issue now sitting down and talking about it for an hour on a podcast. But if a family member were to even try and talk to me about it, or say that I should go maybe speak to somebody about it, I'd be like, fuck off. Like, it just wouldn't be a thing. It'd be like, this is not a discussion. But it's because I don't want to talk about where it's come from. I don't want any sort of blame to be had on maybe other family members or things that happened in my childhood. So I'm the same, where I kind of want to help other people, and it's hard to, it's sort of like when we're in more of the public spotlight, you want to do as much as you can to be brave and to talk about it and to help others. But it's very difficult when you're in family situations, because when you're talking about it, you don't want to place any blame on the family members around you or the relationships you've got. And I think if I were to have relationships now, I shut down very quickly the same. Like, if anything to do with work, if it's not going my way, or if I'm sat doing an email, I'm just like, bloom. And it's only because I'm with somebody who's known me since before a lot of my trauma happened that they're aware of what happens with things. Whereas if I think I was in new relationships, or I found with new friendships, people are like, what are you doing? Like, why have you shut down? Why are you not speaking to me? And I'm like, oh, sorry. So I think we can all find similarities in the way in which we kind of feel. But I wanted to speak to you about, because I was listening to your podcast, and I wanted to talk to you about the difference in your kind of childhood and what you went through in the area you were at. And then I think you went from Nottingham, and then you went to Arsenal, didn't you?
Yeah.
Now, with football and with a routine, how was that for you when you were in your kind of daily routine of football? Because you loved it, I'm sure that was easy and you loved it. But was it very hard being in sort of kind of, because it's quite regimented, isn't it? Like a football schedule, like daily. How was that for you? Was that helpful, or did you struggle? Did you kind of push away from that? Like, how was that?
Well, I knew from early the kind of the schedule, I kind of born into it. So my last year in school, football, actually, not the Notts County in Nottingham, they took me out for my last full year. I didn't even spend my last full year in school. Yeah, the school and football agreed to, we'll call it on the curriculum, that it's work experience.
Yeah.
Because legally there wasn't allowed. So they said it's work experience. So I'll kind of, you know, got the regime, the strictness of football early, and I was used to it, but it was definitely a blessing. It helped. It took my problems and issues. Well, I think I wouldn't say take them away, but you know, subdued them, kind of paved over the cracks, and it was, you know, my way forward to make a better me. But obviously, without that, the issues there, without addressing them, it was always going to be a rocky path and a rocky career. But yeah, I did enjoy it. I loved it. And that was my safe haven.
So then you mentioned earlier that you're retired now. How was that going from, I suppose, football and that schedule to then kind of stepping away from it? Was that a really hard transition in your life?
yeah, that was huge, and mistakes came from that as well. Mm. Not knowing what I'm going to do next. I've done one thing my whole life since I've dreamt about it. You know, since I could walk, I was kicking a football around, and then all of a sudden, that's just got taken away from me.
Yeah.
And back then in football, they never really had anything for after football, life after football. Mm. You wasn't really guided. You wasn't really told much about it. Was you finished? Okay, well, ta-da. Thanks for your service. Now build your new life. I'm like, you're 34, 35. It's tough. And it's hard to deal with, and that's when the stress comes in. That's when the mental issues start coming in, and you start going into depression. Where am I going to start paying for my mortgages? There's only so much amount of money you can save from football that's going to last. It's not going to last for another 60 years or 50 years, however, if you've not got an income. So that plays on your mind, then it's stress for your family, and it's difficult. So it's really hard.
It's a lack of validation as well, because you've had your whole life of a certain thing.
Yeah,
that's who you are, and then suddenly you now got to be someone else. Like,
yeah,
your whole life you were a footballer, that's what you did, that's what you knew yourself as, and now you've got to be something completely different, and you don't know what that is necessarily when you first leave. And it's like the whole new identity almost, isn't it, that you've got to create for yourself. And I don't know about you, but do you think football should do more into, you know, when someone starts out in football, creating something for them so they always know what they're going to do after? Do you think that should be in the criteria?
I think they should. Like, speak to the when players are coming to their end, you know, do they want to go into coaching or the media, or what's your next adventure? And also, there should be someone, like schools have it, most works have it, where you speak to a therapist or psychotherapist, because they don't really understand what players are going through out of football. They just understand what they're doing on the pitch and how they are in the dressing room, and how they don't feel what's going on with the families. They don't know what pressures they've got. You know, if they're not performing, they're probably thinking, why is he not performing? I'm not going to play him next week. I'm going to play someone else. Mm. That could make the matter worse.
Yeah.
So they do need someone in place to speak to, and they do need a little, I don't want to say classroom, but, you know, teachers or something that can help footballers after work to guide them in there, because the amount of players that are retired or that are in depression have actually got absolute nada to go back on. And I know players that are selling their trophies, their Premier League titles, their Champions League winning medals, selling their just to make ends meet.
Yeah, I think it's just it's something that does need to be addressed, because I think we can sort of understand, Kaylee, because it's, you know, with footballers especially, you're being picked, you're not being picked, you've got all these, you know, you're constantly worrying for the next
job. It's like
living
in no man's land, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's the same with acting, really. You finish your job and you're like, shit, where's the next one coming? And it's that constant worry. So that's stressful enough for people that haven't had any problems. So imagine the kids that have had problems and then dealing with that on top, which I guess even the kids that have grown up perfectly happy with no drama whatsoever, they would struggle with that. So put that on top of someone like you who's you know, had all these family problems growing up. I mean, one thing I think that really speaks volumes for you, Jermaine, is that, you know, we were talking about your childhood quite often, we do have discussions, and you were saying how you'd get yourself up and walk yourself to school because your dad was had his own troubles. And, you know, a young boy, you would get yourself dressed and walk yourself to school. Now, if I had gone through what you did, my mum had left and my dad was a kind of a way of doing his own thing, I would not have gotten to school. I know. I wouldn't have got, I hated school, so I wouldn't have gone. And it's that there's something in you, a drive that's kept you going, and I think that speaks volumes. And for now to be doing this podcast, I think there's a drive in you that wants to create and do something better, and I think that speaks volumes of your character, like your deep character.
It's all about survival for me when I was younger. You know, I remember having waking up looking forward to my Kellogg's cornflakes dinner time. I was like, yeah, I can't wait for my Kellogg's cornflakes.
So that was
his
dinner, like, it was so sweet. Didn't you say the kids called you cornflakes?
Yeah, my young friends, because I used to hang around with a lot of older people. They always used to call me Kellogg's cornflakes. But that's all I'd ever eat.
Oh, but you also had, like, you know, not just them, the family issues. You grew up in a really dangerous kind of estate, didn't you? So you was watching drug crime, gang crime, and all of this going on. So you've got, I think we, what's hard for me to see is obviously the press, how they have attacked you. Yes, you've made some stupid mistakes, but you've had zero guidance and you've managed to get where you are by your own fire inside you. And I find that admirable, if anything. And to see all that and not go down that route, I think you're incredible. And, you know, the press, when they do write all these things, they don't look at the deeper issues. And often you'll find, you know, these tragic circumstances that happen, that they'll look at someone from the telly, absolutely annihilate them, and then they'll kill themselves. And then it's, oh, mental health awareness week. And it's
the
like,
biggest
no,
killer of men, suicide.
Yeah. And you've not checked into this person's background. You don't know what's going on with this person, but you're going to absolutely terrorize them in the headlines as much as you can. You don't know what it's doing to that person. The press, you know, I need them as much as we all do when it comes to, like, you know, our, what we're doing, our shows, our podcast, and there's some really lovely sides to it. But when the ugly side comes out and they just want to destroy people, it saddens me, because there's no looking at what the actual issue is for the reason why the person, someone's doing that. People aren't born nasty. Things happen to them, and they become and do silly things or become nasty, and these things happen. And I think we need to look at more, you know, being kinder to one another. And if someone is off the rails, or if someone is being awful or whatever, you've got to remember that's coming from a place of hurt, and we need to be kinder to it. So when we do see these headlines, let's not take to social media and just try and destroy someone on top of it, because you just don't know what someone's going through.
No, and I think there's a line. I think press is there to help, like you said, in terms of if people are interested in a certain person, to know what's going on, what's coming out. People who are fans of Tremaine will be excited for his podcast. That's what press is there for, to help with that hype. It's also there in terms of scandals instead of fraud or legalities, things like that. But I don't think that media should be there to tear apart what someone looks like in a bikini, what someone's going through, what in their personal life. It shouldn't be there for that. It makes no sense as to why that is. The only person it's damaging is, A, I think the conscience of whoever wrote that article should feel that, and that should have some sort of effect on them, and also the person that they're writing it about. Because who cares? I don't look at a magazine and think, oh, I'm really interested in that, you know? And the people that do read that are seeking validation for the opposite reason of what we've just spoken about. They're seeking validation to think that they aren't looking at people that are perfect and want... It sounds horrible to say, but I think the people that read that seek validation to think that people aren't perfect and that there's things going on in their life, whether that is everything that you've just mentioned, whether that's mental health, infidelity, their size, their battling eating issues, whatever that is, that's kind of that. And I think there should be a line with the press, and it's become obvious. We've seen it through Caroline Flack, like the amount of suicide rates that, press, it doesn't have a good influence on people. It's really hard to see. But I think that, you know, we've discussed kind of, you know, Jermaine and what you went through in your childhood. But I think if I had gone and stepped up and been validated on my skills in football and been offered what you get offered when you're in a big team in football, kind of have people, you know, talking about you. You know, you look at even, it's really random and it's only, I apologise because Kieran supports Chelsea, which I know is the opposite of you. But Mason Mount, he was getting told all the time about that he kept messing with his hair, and then he like shaved it all off and scored 2 goals, and now everyone's going on about his hair. But like the fact that he feels the need to cut his hair because the amount of people on Twitter are saying about how he keeps moving his hair during a game, like it's lunacy, isn't it? Like that is, I don't know, there's so much scrutiny on you when you're in that spotlight, isn't it? Especially for you when you're in these top teams and you are validated, you're told you're one of the best players that there is, you're in this team of 11. 11's right, isn't it?
Well, you're a team of probably reserves.
But when you're told that you're in those, you know, the top teams, you're there, like you can go on, and then like you said, what is there afterwards? You know, was there anything at all about a conversation as to where you go, you know, contracts ending, you announce maybe you retire into the media, then what? Is there a discussion with anyone regarding what's going to happen?
It would be your agent, but again, you need to have the right agent. That's, that goes for anything, like Jess or actress or actors and musicians. You know, if you haven't got a good agent around you, then you know that's another battle you have to be fighting. But luckily I've had the same one since I was 15, and he's like his family now is like a father figure, really. So we would speak with him. You know, I made tried to make a quick book, which was going into Big Brother and some reality TV shows, which I do regret. But at the time, I felt that was, you know, why not? Because I had nothing else on the table. But then realizing, oh, that's not the path I wanted to take. So with my agent, we spoke about, you know, talking media. I got offered TalkSport, and I thought I was good on the radio and talking about football, which my knowledge is good. And I'm just being on TV. I enjoy that. I think my personality is exuberant. It's fiery and funny. So I enjoy being on TV. So that's my path that I took, media and radio and TV and football. So that's where I'm going. I enjoy it. He's helped as much as he can on that front, and I've obviously had to do my piece as well and pull my weight. There's one thing with me, I'm not lazy, but if I don't get that little nudge, it won't happen. But as soon as you nudge me and put me in the right direction, then, you know, I'm all go.
Isn't that right, Jess? You see where the podcast comes from. What do you fancy? I'd like to do a podcast. Okay, boom, there, start recording. He's like, okay, but it's true. As soon as we kind of like got the, Jermaine said that's what you wanted to do, we was doing ours, and I was like, well, I'll ask Kaylee how you started, and then we kind of spoke, and as soon as I get, it was like you explained it like this, you know, when you light a lighter and you have the little spark, so you give him the spark and then he gets the fire. So you've been smashing it out, you've been doing well with it. And I think the thing is also, you know, you did mention doing the reality shows, and I kind of got that. It's the time you're having an identity crisis, the worst possible time to go in them kind of shows, and you go and do them. It's like, you know, when I went into Big Brother, I was crying nearly every day, just hiding under the covers, because I shouldn't have been in there. I enjoyed Big Brother because I did have a nice bunch of women and men around me. But, you know, it's you're doing these things and you're being judged on your personality now. So you've gone from being judged on your football to being judged on you as a person. It's just constant judging. And reality
is really difficult, because some people it makes them, like, you've had some people that go in, you see them go in the jungle, go in Big Brother, and it kind of like rehashes them, doesn't it? I think that's a completely wrong word. It relives them. They kind of come out of it with that support, with that. So I think it's very hard with reality, and when you choose to do something like Big Brother or whatever it is, because in some cases, like you said, it does no good for you. You're like, why am I doing here? This is not the path that I want to take. Like, I've taken it for kind of a quick buck. And on the other side of it, you know, it's done well for people. So I think that's the thing, isn't it? When you're given that, even I'd find the same. Someone said, right, I'll offer you this. You spend 3 weeks in a house. You'd be like, well, let me have a think, because it's not instantly, it's horrendous, is it? There's that. I totally get what you're saying. But that's right. That's what I was going to say. I lost it then. Is that it's lovely because you and Jess have the same manager, Sky, and it seems like Sky has been very much a kind of loving figure for you both, and kind of been there and supported you. And I don't think many people, me included, I mean, I think I'm on my fifth manager at the moment, has had that or had that. And that is a massive part of anyone's career, I think, is having someone who is supportive, can see what they need. And I think I heard you saying, not to say too much about your podcast, because that's for you, but you mentioned in it once you got to Liverpool that you kind of said, this is not where I want to be, like, I don't, you know, this is, I'm not happy. And I think, like, for you to be able to be open with your manager and speak in that way, not many people have. So I think it's lovely that you both have that person there to help in both your careers.
Yeah, I think with,
no, yeah,
Sky. No, definitely.
No.
What we know about Sky is that, you know, I've had managers, and you think, and a lot of people have had this, where it's almost like you're not being yourself, you're being told how to be, and so you be, and then you get a certain image, and then that image can't be changed because they've made their bit of money out of you. And I'm very trusting, and I am and I'm not, so I'm very, very trusting to the point where I believe everyone's going to have my best interest at heart, and not think, oh, I'll just get a bit, you know, this story, or this will make a bit of money. I think, oh no, they've got my interest, but they don't. It's actually just making money. And I fell victim to that. Whereas Sky, I think he's the same for you, would not let anything happen or come out or put us on the wrong path if he genuinely didn't believe it was good for us. And I think, you know, the trust in him, that I know he wouldn't sell me out in that kind of way. He is like a father figure to us both. And we was actually terrified when we started dating. We were terrified to tell him. We're like naughty. We're like, oh my God,
what are you saying?
Myself, I was like, I don't want to tell Sky. I need to make sure it's working, because we don't want to destroy anything. Like, I was absolutely terrified. And then this div, we were sat around. I'm just going to tell this funny story. We were sat at Sky's house once, the pair of us. Sky didn't know we were kind of talking at this point, and he was texting me on on my phone. So I was on one sofa, Jermaine's on one sofa, Sky's on the other. And I'm showing Sky something on my phone. And Jermaine has seen I've given my phone to Sky. And I see him texting. And I'm like, please stop, please stop.
Bearing in mind, I was hungover though.
On these very rare occasions where we've drunk. Very, very rare occasions. This happened to be one of them. And he's looking at, Sky's looking at my phone. And I'm looking at Jermaine. And I'm like, no, surely he's not replying to me. Because he knows Sky's got my phone. And then he's texted something borderline.
Naughty, naughty.
Oh my God. And Sky just looked up and he went, you know I've got her phone, didn't it? And I was like, oh, my heart went into my backside. Oh, and then Kai said something and walked out. And I was like, looking at him like, you bloody idiot. You bloody idiot.
It's like, what? Then, what happened?
And then I just didn't even know. It was just, you know, when you've got this like family unit, we were so worried. I especially, I don't know about you, but I was so worried about that ever getting destroyed.
I remember, we worked together, I think at the very start of kind of you two's relationship. And I remember just everything you'd always say is just Sky's going to kill me.
Yeah, that was funny, but it all worked out because I think he knows, you know, we kind of are bringing out the best in each other and things, and I think Sky can see that as well.
We're just very similar. We're very, you know,
I think the 8 a.m bed shout definitely helps us both, because it's very rare to find someone that likes to go to bed as early as I do.
Well, I think you're both very similar as well in your cause for what you want to do for the rest of your careers. Like, I think that plays a massive part in what you guys are doing, because I think within your industry it can be very difficult when someone's off for 6 months or someone's off here, whereas what you both want to do now is very similar, and the conversations you're having and the time you spend together is for a similar cause. Kind of, you're both massive kind of mental health advocates now and talking about things and want to help others, so that bonds you both as well, doesn't it? Because you have, you know,
I'm
guiding myself in my hand, I'm not saying anything.
Yeah, because she's had a similar background, a tough upbringing as well, then it does bond us a little bit easier and closer, as in we understand each other a lot more. Where if she was actually, you know, handed that golden spoon, and I'm telling the issue, be like, what are you talking about, peasant?
I think we can, like, understand each other as well when it comes to, we kind of can get each other, you know. So if I'm feeling a bit anxious, he will notice my breathing goes funny, and he can be like, I'm feeling a bit anxious, something you want to talk about? Like, we can pick up because we both had that, so you can both kind of understand. I mean, the different circumstances, but it's still a
trauma,
shitty
trauma.
Yeah. And you know, it's one of those things where, you know, we can kind of, I know when to not push something. If something's bothering me, I know not to push it. If something's bothering him, I think you kind of do the same with me. Or if I want to talk, you'll say, I can see you're breathing funny, you've got the anxiety, you want to talk to me. And it can take me a while, but he'll wait and he won't be mad at me. And I think that's quite nice to have. I feel a bit safe around him to be able to do that and talk.
It's lovely. I feel like I'm not part of the gang. I feel like
you're part of the gang.
I'm hearing a lot about you, Kaylee. You're part of the gang, don't
worry.
You're
literally talking about every day. I'm like, well, my name's Kaylee, blah, blah, blah. And I'm not even lying. That's why he's laughing.
No, it's lovely. And I think it's so lovely you've found each other. You know, you have so much in common, which is mad, isn't it? Like, you same manager, which I know it's how you met, but it's same manager and kind of, you know, the same things you want to achieve now, similar trauma that you've been through. You're just very on the level, aren't you? You're on the level with each other and you know what each other need. And you know, as Jess's friend, Jermaine, I have to say, on a public, you know, place, that what was it my dad said to Kieran when we first started going out? I think he said, if you hurt her, I'll break your legs. So, I mean, I can put that threat out there. I don't think I could do it, Jermaine. I don't think I could come and break your legs.
I'll tell you what, I've got a lot of threats, me. You know? A lot of people threatening me, Jesus.
You give him a good telling off, a strongly worded letter.
I'll write you a letter, and I'll threaten it. I'll do like a drawing, but I won't be able to do it. No, but I think you are. I think you're on a similar footing with things. And it's amazing what you want to do. And I think that your podcast will be so, so helpful for so many people. Even me, like, listening to your podcast was so it's very raw and it's so honest. Yeah. And it's really hard for people, anyone, like, you know, anyone who hasn't even gone through what you've been through or had written in the press what's had written about you, to come on and be that honest from the offset, like straight away, was amazing. And I personally wish you all the best with your podcast. And
thank you very much.
And yeah, and what's the next 5 years for you? What's happening? What do you want to do?
Well, hopefully this can, you know, kickstart certain avenues. Again, stay in the media, media world, like TalkSport. I really do love that. I want to get more shows on that, and hopefully get a documentary out there to see things, so you can not only the voice and audio, visualize it as well, to actually see the where it all started, you know, where it went, where it's ending, and where it's gonna finish. It will be, yeah. So we've got a lot of things in the pipeline.
Absolutely.
With you. With you.
Very bad. Do you know, talking about that, I was watching that John Gacy documentary last night. Oh, it creeped me. Have you watched it yet?
I put it on the other day, but I only watched about 20 minutes, so I need to watch the whole thing. Serial killer.
Serial killer.
He must think we're nuts, because my idea of having a relaxation is watching a serial killer documentary of a nighttime.
Literally. Kieran went out last night and I just sat and watched all three episodes of, like, the serial killer. And suddenly I heard a noise and the dog barked and I was like, oh my God, he's here. What?
I'm dying. John Gacy's here.
Can I just say something? Last night she woke up in the biggest panic and said, "You're going to kill me." And I'm like, what?
So I need to
know what happened. I was on the laptop. I was on the laptop and I was kind of hiding it. I was hiding it under the quilt because I didn't want the light.
She plays an F1 game.
Yeah. So I didn't want it. So I didn't want the light to wake up or, you know, bother her. And then she's tossing and turning and she wakes up and goes, what are you doing? And I was like, just playing this. That's under the quilt. But she went, grabbed it and went,
So I just had a dream. Let me explain this. I sound like a crazy person. I dreamt I was in my bed. So I was in the exact same situation. Was in bed together. And he'd answered a phone. You know, the old cord phones. And he was come like this and answered it. And I could hear what was being said. And it was about to kill me. So I've woken up in a panic. And I looked to the side. And he was looking at me. And I was like, what are you doing?
Oh, my God.
Because it was in the same bed. In the same, my dream. Next to each other. Same people. I just, you know, you're still in that dream state.
Yeah.
I was like, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, hang on, don't worry, I thought you're going to kill me, but you didn't know, so it's all good. And it took me a good 10 minutes to get out of it.
She dropped off and went, holding my hand in bed, went, Pennant, don't kill me.
I don't remember that. I'm here to tell the tale, so that's good news.
There you go. That is mad.
And he's also fell victim to, you know, when you have the dream where he's cheated on you and you wake up and you're livid.
Oh my God.
I'm like, no, I don't want to talk to you. And he's like, what the fuck?
Remember, I had that with Kieran. I had a dream that Kieran had paid $2,000 a night for I can't remember what she was called, but for like a Spanish prostitute. And it was so vivid. And it was at my mum's house for some reason. And then I woke up and I was fuming like for the whole day. I was like, how fucking dare you? She was brunette. She looks nothing like me. And it was completely in my head.
And he's like, okay. Anyway,
so, is it enough to go through? I don't know.
Now the most important question of all, which is not how we ever finish the podcast, but who do you think is going to win the F1 season?
I'm gonna go with Leclerc, because I hate Verstappen. Yeah, I'm gonna go with Charles. I'm not a Verstappen fan after that last, you know, what he robbed Lewis.
You're still living about that.
I'm still living about it.
You never stop hearing about it.
It's like Voldemort.
It's difficult. I think I'm really sad for Mercedes. The only thing I will say, and I don't know if you'll agree with me because you're a Lewis fan, is if you watched the sprint yesterday and you see the two interviews, Russell and Hamilton. The only thing that bothers me about Hamilton, I think he's amazing, he's incredible, he's done very well. Obviously very bitter because I was a Michael Schumacher fan, so the fact that he's kind of beaten a lot of his records, go fuck himself. But except for that, love him, he's great. Is like just how he speaks in interviews sometimes.
Yes. It's like it's borderline arrogant.
You know,
it's borderline arrogant and short. George is. His information, he gives you knowledge, he explains. He's like,
Kayleigh's
love Lewis is, you ask him questions like, well, I don't think that. Well, then explain why.
And it's not our fault that you're performing. It's not our fault. Like, chill out. So I think that's what I think he's an incredible driver. I think it's that attitude that really bothers me about him. So I find it hard to support him.
Yeah.
But you know, I understand last season wasn't right. He's gone. Yeah. Old Michael Massey, he's off. Yeah. But yeah, Leclerc, lovely. That's what we like to wear. Ferrari. Well, there you go. Thank you so much. We have reached the finale. Do you know what? It's just been lovely speaking to you both. We're trying to set someone up in person, aren't we? But I haven't had a chance to kind of speak to you both, just kind of chill. So it's been lovely. And thank you for being so open. And it's weird speaking to you both like this. I feel like I'm on like, I don't know, Lorraine or something, like speaking to you. Both.
Loose women.
Yeah. I'm on Loose Women, just one-handed. I'm like, let's go.
Well, you've handled it very well.
Oh, thanks so much. But no, it's lovely as always.
Absolute pleasure, absolute pleasure, ladies.
And thanks for coming on, Pennant.
Yeah, I'm just going to head off now. I've got
I'm off.
I'm going to go.
Don't get accused of murder in my sleep.
Thanks to all our listeners, and we will see you next week.
We'd like to say a special thank you to Audio Boom for distributing the series, and Popple for our jingle and raspberry.